Yeah, this is the way it goes.
It was Willie the Lion. And man, I never heard a left hand like that in my life. I mean, he took the tempo that I was in, bumped it up about a couple of notches, and kept right on going, man. It sounded like two guys at the piano.
Willie's almost of whole cloth, synthesis of 19th century and jazz.
Willie had a wonderful feeling for classical music. He was one of the few musicians that played pure jazz, and you could hear the classical influence.
Pianist-composer Willie the Lion Smith was a true original in the history of jazz, as you can hear from this composition of his, Echo of Spring. Along with his buddies James P. Johnson and Thomas Fats Waller, the Lion was one of the reigning masters of the style of piano known as Harlem Stride. But Willie combined the lively stride style with his own delicate, impressionistic touch to create compositions and performances that were unique. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles. On this show, we celebrate the music of pianist-composer Willie the Lion Smith. A singer, accompanist, and vaudeville entertainer known for his cigar, checked vest, and derby hat, the Lion's signature style was, above all, as a breathtaking pianist. Dr. Billy Taylor was a college student visiting Harlem when he first met the Lion.
So I sat down and I played something kind of fast. And I was about 8 bars into it, and one of the older guys got up and said, "Let me try a little of that, son." It was Willie the Lion, and man, I never heard a left hand like that in my life. I mean, he took the tempo that I was in, bumped it up about a couple of notches, and kept right on going, man. It sounded like two guys at the piano.
So we brought up the tempo. She's off now.
The Lion touched many musicians along the way, from Fats Waller and Duke Ellington to Art Tatum and Thelonious Monk. They were all influenced by the Lion's harmonies, reharmonizations, touch, rhythm, and other pianistic devices.
I can see why Ellington and Thelonious Monk were so enamored with him. They recognized this rhythmic and harmonic difference in what he did, different from, say, Fats Waller or James P. or some of the other players of the time.
The Lion student and friend, pianist Brooks Kerr.
There was a lot of exchange between the Lion and Monk. And the one big similarity they did have was they were constantly rephrasing, not so much rewriting, but rephrasing their melodies.
Even the great Charles Mingus was moved when he heard the Lion play one night in New Haven, Connecticut.
I think Mingus almost began to cry. I remember what he said was, "My God, that man touches a piano like a father cradles his baby." And he said it with such emotion.
The Lion also brought a classical influence to the music he played and wrote. Mike Lipskin was a student and friend of the Lions.
If you look back 200 years from now, you'll say Willie the Lion Smith, a great individual American composer of piano miniatures.
As a composer, he was more inventive than many people realized. This is from his 1939 recording of Passionette. Lion's pieces were always challenging. Pianist arranger Dick Hyman.
Willie's left hand was very steady and required a lot from the player. And then he had one display piece called the Finger Buster, which is hard for either hand, and I had to learn that once. It goes like this.
Dick Hyman playing Willie the Lion Smith's composition, Finger Buster. In addition to his innovative compositions, Willie, the seasoned entertainer, was also known for his ability to size up the vibes of a room as soon as he entered, and for walking out if he didn't like the feeling. The lion's here, he'd say, but this ain't his lair.
Willie would sort of hold forth.
Soprano saxophonist Bob Wilbur.
He would take over a club that he worked in, and he would be kind of the master of ceremonies, the piano player, and also he would talk to the audience. Musicians would come in, and he would sit with them and philosophize about life, about whatever, you know. And we'd all sit there listening to Willie.
And when Willie talked, he took you all the way back to the beginning.
Well, I was born in a little place called Goshen, New York. 1897, 25th day of November. Name, William Henry Joseph Berthal Bonaparte Bertalup Smith. What a name.
On a 1957 album, The Lion Roars, Willie talked with jazz critic Leonard Feather about his early years.
My mother played the organ, my grandmother played the organ and the guitar. That's where I take the music from. It's handed down from the family. I can recollect that I first played the piano at the age of 8. I could play, sing, and dance. I used to hear my mother play something as a hymn, and I used to take it and play it in ragtime, we called it then. Some folks called it gut bucket. Some folks called it in the alley. Some folks called it lowdown, as you feel it.
The family moved from Goshen to Newark, New Jersey, when Willie was quite young. Growing up in Newark, he was exposed to the music of both the Jewish and black communities.
And I was always kind of thrilled about the way the Baptists sang, because they seemed to give vent to their feeling. Two things attracted me in my early boyhood, and still does, between the Baptists, colored people, and the Jewish people.
This affinity he felt for Jewish culture was reflected in the fact that Willie sang in the Yiddish dialect he'd learned growing up. He taught one song to the young Duke Ellington when he first came to New York. The title, Nach Abyssal, meant a little more.
A couple of times I got a little bit disillusioned, you know, about not enough. But we always hung out together. I said, don't worry about a thing. Because I was well known around the hot dog stands, you know, up there in Harlem, all the kosher places. So now we ate good. The main thing was cooperation. We all liked each other. Duke and them, when they first come with the band, they was working down in Bernstein's downtown. So in Jewish, you know, we say, Nach Abyssal, knock, knock. So I taught this to Duke. Nach Abyssal, Nach Abyssal, knock, knock, knock. Yehov Abyssal, Hov Abyssal, knock, knock, knock. Give a bissel, oi weis mir, give a stickle, oi weis mir, nach a bissel, nach a bissel, knock, knock, knock. You hop a bissel, knock, knock, knock. Oi weis, give a bissel, knock, knock, knock.
I hope that he does again. Come the chain of knock a moitzer, knock a bissel, knock a bissel. Knock, knock, knock. Give a sticker.
Before World War I, Newark's Tenderloin District was known as the Coast. Like many young entertainers, Willie made his way there to work in the sporting houses and clubs where ragtime pianists were in demand. By 1914, he was beginning to be exposed to the music of pianists like James P. Johnson and Lucky Roberts, who became lifelong friends. And by 1915, Willie was one of the many young piano players working in the lively summer resort of Atlantic City. But soon, he took an even longer trip. The next year, Willie traded in his derby for a private's hat and enlisted in the Army. His all-black unit was sent to France, where he acted as drum major for the famous brass band known as the 70 Black Devils of the United States 350th Field Artillery. He also spent 49 days on the front shooting a cannon without relief. It was there that he earned the name Lion for his excellent conduct, nerve, faith, and intuition. One tune he heard over there was Le Matelon, a French military march that evoked the pride of the French soldiers. He recorded this version in 1972 with drummer Papa Joe Jones. Willie the Lion Smith and Le Matelon. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, a celebration of the music of pianist-composer Willie the Lion Smith. By 1919, Willie was back in post-war America. He was playing in clubs and cutting his first record as accompanist to Mamie Smith on the famous Crazy Blues recording that started the blues craze of the 1920s. He was also touring on the vaudeville circuit.
Well, we played the B.F. Keith, the Poli, the Pantages, the Orpheum Circuit, and the T.O.B.A. Call that the Colored People Circuit. You played the T.O.B.A. and then you played the nothing but colored people, colored houses. You know, like all through the South, and you come to New York, that time you played the Lafayette Theater, you play the Apollo Theater.
During the 20s, New York was alive with music, from Broadway theaters to Harlem clubs. Composer George Gershwin and other Broadway acolytes were frequent visitors to the uptown scene and often stopped by to hear the Lion holding forth, Bob Wilbur.
He was very receptive to helping young musicians. This is a tradition with Willie that goes right back to the 20s when he was playing at a club called Pods and Jerry's in Harlem. And a lot of the young white musicians who were working on Broadway on the pit shows and so forth, people like Bix Beiderbecke, the Dorsey Brothers, Artie Shaw, they would all troop uptown after their regular gig to go to listen to Willie and sit in.
In Harlem during the late teens and early 20s, the piano masters were playing and creating the style of piano known as stride. The Lion, never one for much formal analysis, defined it this way during a 1967 interview with Henry Whiston of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
I'd call it swinging. You know, swinging at a merry pace, you know, like you pick up a temper. You make both hands go like this. Mm-hmm. Oh, you go this way, this way. When I swim, you go this way and you go this way. That's the same way. And my mother, and also I used to dance, and she used to say, don't dance up on the right side and come back on the right side. Go up the right side and come back on the left. Alternate.
But his best definition of stride was by musical example. On a 1968 album, The Memoirs of Willie the Lion Smith, the Lion reminisced with Mike Lipskin.
This is the style of piano they played when they didn't have good left hands. Now that's what they call the corn. Some people think it's piano, but that's pure corn. It means I don't know how to play. Because if I was going to put that same strain in, I'd stride it. Stride means real good.
Stride piano arose around the time of World War I and came out of ragtime. Dick Hyman.
If ragtime was in this sort of bass, stride was more like this. I think the name stride comes from the stretch that the left hand has to go between this beat and this beat. Over an octave. Also, the stride players began to develop a counter melody with the lowest tones. So it wasn't just the back and forth of the ragtime people. They would make melodies down there. And with the right hand, they began to do different figures from what Joplin and people like that were using. It often sounded like this, and it always swung in a triplet sort of a sense. Sometimes the left hand would be broken like this. Sometimes the left hand, instead of just single notes or octaves, would be in tenths, the way Gershwin did in that his arrangement of Liza. And Willie had a way of making it even harder, because he would take the left hand stride pattern and kind of deconstruct it. Played an even more difficult game than some of the other fellows.
Stride, at its best, had a full orchestral sound, because in those days, many New York club owners wouldn't pay to hire a bassist or guitarist. The piano had to do it all, playing solo for dances all night long. When Willie sat down to play, anything could happen. He could play chorus after chorus of a standard and do something different every time. He could change keys, tempos, and harmonies, and still let you know what tune you were listening to. His 1939 recording of The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea is an example of Willie's stride piano at its very best. Mike Lipskin.
His first chorus of it, which he does a tempo, you can hear the melody, but he's using all these different chord progressions that are unique to Willie. The original goes something like this.
And Willie would do this. Here's Willie the Lion Smith stride, Tour de Force, the 1939 recording of The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. Thank you. Willie the Lion Smith's 1939 recording of The Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. Just ahead, Willie the Lion Smith psychs out the competition at the legendary Harlem Cutting Contest. I'm Nancy Wilson. It's Jazz Profiles, a celebration of the music of pianist-composer Willie the Lion Smith from NPR, National Public Radio. Fats Waller sang about the Harlem Rent Party in his song, The Joint is Jumpin'.
They have a new expression along old Harlem way that tells you
the Harlem Rent Party was exactly what its name implied, a party held to raise the rent and sometimes raise the roof. When times were hard, folks on three or four floors of a building would cook for days, set out a spread, open the doors, and charge admission.
It is. The joint is jumping. It's really jumping. Come in, cats, and check your hats. I mean, the joint is jumping. The piano's thumping. The dancers are bumping.
The music at these Saturday night functions was one of the biggest draws, and players like Willie were always in demand.
Be sure to pay your quarter.
Willie the Lion.
So they would run these affairs, and they would hire a pianist to play. And the fee was $10, and all you could eat. And if you had a couple of buddies you wanted to bring along to play, they would split up to 10. They would play so that the next session would be mine, and the next would be Jimmy's, and the next would be Fats. And we had different guys like Abba Labba, other guys, and we had Corky, different pianists used to show. But the pilot socials belonged to James P. Johnson, Willie the Lion, and Fats Waller.
These Harlem ticklers, as they were called, were fiercely competitive in their efforts to best each other. There were no holds barred. The Lion had a full arsenal of devices to ensure victory. Some were musical, like reharmonizing tunes or changing keys. At the cutting contest, the Lion also had some strategies that were strictly non-musical.
I had a habit like a fighter has. It's called psychology. When a guy is playing his heart out, I walk up and say, "Get away from that piano, man." And say it like you mean it, or grab his arms and get away from there.
Pianist and student of Willie's, Brooks Kerr.
Hubie Blake and the Lion used to get together in my hometown, and the Lion had a way of trying to undermine the other pianist in the battle of music by getting as negative as he could and as personal as he could, calling him baldy and things like that. And I was quite taken aback when I heard all this. But Blake didn't seem to mind. That was just the Lion's way.
Once in the early 1930s, before the great Art Tatum arrived in New York, the Lion's pals decided to get even with him, student and friend of Willie's, Mike Lipskin.
There was an arrogant side of his personality. He could be very braggadocio. he could also be sweet, but obviously the other musicians wanted to put him on. So these other pianists would call him up at 3 a.m. and say, Art Tatum's on his way, he's reached Ohio, now he's in New Jersey, and he's here. So they keep waking him up, you know, and on the phone, bothering him. So finally, the next night, or a week or so, you know, they're getting together, there's going to be this big cutting contest, Willie Lyon Smith and Art Tatum. So Art Tatum plays first, and he plays so incredibly fast and in different keys. Willie's only response was, I don't play against trick pianists.
If Willie's playing and personality were unique, so was his language. He even made up his own musical terms, like the word crip, Brooks Kerr.
He told me a crip is a lick of your own invention that you fall back on in a dry moment in your solo when you're uninspired. And so Willie had a lot of crips that he used to play, one of which was like that. And he used to have names for them, and they were all animals.
Music is just like an animal. Everything's got a phrase, it's got a name. It's got a beat, it's got a rip. It's got a beginning, it's got an ending. It's got a sequence, it's got a climax.
And he was a master at the jive talk of the day. Chapeau meant hat in French. A gink was a jerk. And shuffle meant walk. The Lion even bragged about teaching the young Fats Waller how to be hip.
I taught him the jive talk and the sharp phrasing of slang phrases. In other words, the English language as it really goes. Did you see Mr. Jones tonight? Did you spot the derby on that guy's gink? Did you spot the chapeau on the guy's knowledge bump? Did you see the shuffle on that gink that just pulled in the joint? You know, that's the modern slang, it'll always stay. Phraseology.
During the 1930s, Willie wrote some of his most beautiful pieces, Echo of Spring and Morning Air among them. In one interview, he gave an insight into how he composed.
You take a passage, and while you're playing something, you hear something. That for the clarinet. And if your reflexes is fast enough, you can put it in maybe the second go round.
Willie's inspiration could also come from the things around him.
Lots of people think that jazz musicians don't play classics or have a classical feeling. I was sitting on the bench one morning around 6:30. Around April, two good friends of mine, Jack Teagarden and George Wedling, in front of my house in 580 St. Nicholas Avenue. They were speaking how beautiful the trees look in front of City College. So I said, I got a melody now that's running through my head. I'd like to hum it to you if you don't mind. And this is how the melody went.
The melody is Echo of Spring, probably the Lion's most famous composition, and one that is infused with a classical impressionistic feeling.
Thank you.
Willie the Lion Smith's Echo of Spring. Longtime friend of the Lions, pianist and festival producer George Wing.
Willie had a wonderful feeling for classical music. He was one of the few musicians that played pure jazz, and you could hear the classical influence. It wasn't that he played classical music, or like a lot of jazz musicians tried to play classical music. It was just that his jazz, his compositions, had a feeling of classical music, the training and background.
Mike Lipskin.
Well, he kept talking about the great composers, Ravel, Debussy. He used to say Debussy, Ravel, Bach, Beethoven, all the masters.
In the days when Willie was growing up, Tin Pan Alley and its tunes were not as pervasive as they would later become. So many ragtime and jazz players liked to rag the classics.
Willie on occasion would play excerpts from classical stuff. He would also try to play the Chopin, the famous Polonaise.
Willie recorded this version of Chopin's Variations in 1971.
The first part of the Polonaise, but I didn't like the way the gentleman wrote the trio, so I wrote a trio behind it in swing.
Willie the Lion Smith's Chopin Variations. Willie himself would refer to composers he admired.
If you listen carefully at the piano, you'll hear Chopin in the left hand and Debussy in the right. Put them together, you've got contrary motions bucking against one another. They'll tell a story. I'll use the pedal soft so that you can get the movement. Then as I go, I'll phrase. Would you like to hear Harlem, George?
Willie the Lion's Harlem Joys. In addition to being influenced by classical music, the Lion was also absorbing the popular music of the day. Novelette, a 1923 piece by pianist Cez Comfrey, the composer of the popular Kitten on the Keys, is another example of the kind of work the Lion would have been exposed to. Dick Hyman plays.
¶¶
This prancing on the lawn kind of music is characteristic of salon music of that time. It really wasn't jazz, but it seemed to me that it influenced Willie, and he retained it, and he used it in many of his things. I think that Willie was very influenced by a kind of salon piano music, which was very much in the air in those days, and was exemplified by people like Edward McDowell in To a Wild Rose in particular, and Percy Grainger even.
Morning Air is a Lyon composition copyrighted in 1938.
If you take the first part of his piece called Morning Air, you find this very piquant kind of thing.
Here's how it sounded when Willie recorded it in 1939. Willie the Lion Smith's Morning Air.
See, now this is a modern and the climax of the Dixieland with the Passionette Code. I'd like to play one of my selections. The title, Passionette. Merci beaucoup.
Passionette, another one of the Lion's most well-known compositions, was recorded by saxophonist bandleader Teddy Hill in 1936. Even before the Lion recorded it in 1939. Smith and Passionette. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is Jazz Profiles, a celebration of the music of pianist-composer Willie the Lion Smith. The Lion's composition, Sneak Away, is a showcase piece that synthesizes into one sound the many different aspects of his playing and writing. The Lion talked about it on a 1968 recording.
This is for the guys who talk about the modern. Here's all the modern things you want to hear.
The work starts off with a rousing stride riff. gives us a hint of Debussy, and eventually moves to a Spanish tinge or tango theme that foreshadows what Bud Powell would be doing 10 years later. Here is Willie's Sneak Away.
Called Sneak Away, classical formation of jive and swing.
From a 1968 recording. The Lion himself called the work a classical formation of jive and swing. Where does Willie's music fit into the American piano music repertoire? Dick Hyman.
It's in some ways too concert-like to be considered really hot jazz. And on the other hand, it's too syncopated for many classical pianists to want to get into. I think there's a middle ground. I think a lot of Gershwin's music is in there. I think Duke Ellington more and more is seen to be in that middle ground. And I think Willie belongs there.
Willie the Lion Smith lived through 6 decades of the music. And despite the changes in musical forms and styles, he always remained true to himself musically. Another Stride pianist and friend of Willie's, Willie Gant, once gave Mike Lipscomb this perspective on the early days.
As Willie Gant said to me in the late 50s and early 60s, he says, you know, people think about post-bop and Thelonious Monk and all this groundbreaking stuff with Sonny Rollins. What we were doing after World War I in the 20s was the same thing. We were young people doing something that was a new sound at that time. We were inventing things. James P. was inventing things. And that's true. Nobody sounded like James P. Nobody used his pianistic devices. And the same with Willie. Willie's almost of whole cloth, synthesis of 19th century and jazz.
The Lion's last recording date was in Paris on June 6, 1972, when he got together with another jazz giant, drummer Papa Joe Jones. One tune they recorded that day was the Lion's own Zigzag. The Lion played up until the end of his life, when cancer took him on April 18th, 1973. But the Lion's legacy and spirit still live on in his music.
There's an old saying, you can play as long as they can wheel you up to the piano, you can get to your horn, he'll play it. And I'll do the same. As long as they can wheel me up to the piano with the help of the good Lord, I'm going to play.
I've got music. I've got music. Music on my mind.
A celebration of the music of pianist-composer Willie the Lion Smith was written and produced by Sally Plaxen. Technical director, Duke Marcos. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Website coordinator, Bettina Owens. Executive producers, Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. We'd like to thank Mike Lipscomb, Brooks Kerr, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, NPR bureaus in New York and Los Angeles, and Dan Morgenstern and Vincent Pelote of the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University. To email us or for more information about Jazz Profiles, this program, and a listing of future programs in the series, look for NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Support for this program comes from a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's Radio Program Fund, National Public Radio member stations, NPR, and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.